It's time for Eco Talk with host Betsy Rosenberg.
She'll be great. She's a very smart, capable person who knows exactly what took place and will lay out the facts. And that's what the American people want to see.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
Hey, thanks, George. I wish I could say the same about you. And welcome to Eco Talk. I'm Betsy Rosenberg. And on today's show, we will bring you author Anthony Flint talking about his new book, This Land, The Battle Over Sprawl and the Future of America. Reviewers have called this an essential read for those working to build more vibrant, livable, and sustainable communities. And that should be all of us. Then we'll have Stevie Smith in the studio. You're going to want to meet him. He's quite an adventure. He's going to talk about his Expedition 360, his human-powered trip pedaling around the Earth. And then science advisor Shauna Weber will tell us about her upcoming Father's Day celebration, EcoStyle, with a great green gift idea I bet you had not thought of. I'd be willing to bet money. And in our second half, we'll chat with Dan Lashoff of the Natural Resources Defense Council. He'll be digging into the future of coal. Is there such a thing as clean coal? And what is gasification of coal anyway? And last but not least, Paul Achitoff in Earth Justice's Hawaii office talking about efforts to ensure oversight of biopharmaceutical developments. That's growing drugs in food crops, in case you didn't know. All that and more upcoming on this edition of Eco Talk. Want to recognize those who make this program possible each week. The Natural Resources Defense Council, better known as the NRDC, which is easier to say, and Earth Justice. So welcome. And Anthony Flint, thank you for joining us. And thank you for writing this book. And it's a real measured book in that, based on the reviews I've seen, it's not black versus white. Sprawl isn't all bad. Suburbs are necessary. But you really did quite an extensive analysis in your book, The Land, The Battle Over Sprawl and the Future of America, This Land. What did you find that most surprised you?
Well, you know, as I looked at how we've been spreading ourselves so thinly across the landscape since World War II, I really was struck by how mindless, really, we've been about building and development patterns, and that it's taken us this long, really, to be more thoughtful about how we build and how we organize ourselves physically on the land.
Whenever I hear the term smart growth spoken of, and that's often, and sprawl, I say, yeah, but what do we do with what's already built? Is there anything we can do with what's already in place?
Well, that's really the key theme behind smart growth. Is it's like a big national recycling program for land. The idea behind it is to go and take advantage of existing infrastructure to rediscover some parts of the urban landscape that have been overlooked and passed over. Perhaps it's a factory site or a industrial waterfront in cities large or small, and these are the kinds of places that are being rediscovered and redeveloped, and it's especially timely because people are rediscovering the joys of urban living.
Now, some of the more obvious reasons that we've seen sprawl grow, it's expensive to live in, you know, urban areas. People are, you know, needing to go farther out to find affordable housing. What are some other factors that may not be as obvious that have really contributed to the sprawling of the states?
Well, affordability really is the first impetus to head out to these sprawling areas. You know, people are moving to West Virginia and commuting to the Washington, D.C. area. They're moving to the Central Valley in California and commuting to San Jose, San Francisco. The reason they're doing this is not because they really like the 1 hour or 1.5 hour drive. It's because they're driving to qualify. They're getting that house that, at least at first, looks like it's within reach and is a more affordable price. But what's happening is that millions of Americans are really making a new calculus for how they live is really affecting their budget, and they're factoring in the transportation and energy costs.
Not to mention just quality of life, all that time spent driving.
Absolutely. The quality of life has been a big issue. If you can't ever get home for that 5:30 Little League game, all you want to do is collapse when you do get home after that long commute. But really, in terms of our pocketbooks, where it's hitting us is the cost of gasoline, over $3 a gallon, and the cost of heating and cooling that 2,500 or 3,000 square foot home.
So with predictions that there will be up to 120 million more people in the United States by the year 2050, what would the consequences be if we don't get sprawl under control?
Well, that's really a big part of why I wrote this book. I was fascinated by the idea that we will add that many people, 120 million more people, say. We're about 300 million now. And if all of those people are to live in sprawl, I think we're going to have a very dysfunctional country on our hands. It's about four dozen major metropolitan areas, and the suburban development that you're seeing today is really sort of hyper-dispersed. It's beyond the periphery, miles from anywhere, these sprawling subdivisions and strip malls and big box areas that require driving a car everywhere. And if all of those people live in environments like that, we're going to be spending a lot of money, going broke really, spending money filling up our tanks and spending a lot of time in the car.
If we're still using gasoline, which I hope we're not by the year 2050, we can't be. There won't be any oil left long before that. But it's just also the environmental problems of driving so far. And it seems like there's just increasingly no there in a lot of towns and cities because one leads to the next.
Well, what people are really discovering that they like is being able to walk to the store to pick up a half gallon of milk, not having to hop in the car for absolutely every errand. You know, 80% of our car trips are for errands, and there are environmental consequences. We each put 26 tons of carbon into the air each year, and that is primarily from driving. And we drive so much because we have these physical landscapes that are so spread out that pretty much require so much driving. So people are really discovering that they like to be able to walk. They would like to be able to take transit. It's just that for millions of Americans right now, there's no transit to take and nothing to walk to.
So what do we do?
Well, one thing that technology is not going to do for us, it might do some interesting things in terms of hybrid cars and alternative energy like solar, wind, and those kinds of alternatives. But there's one thing technology is not going to do, and that's going to make and that is to make energy cheap again. So We've got to come to terms with the fact that energy is no longer going to be cheap. And of course, we've built our physical environment based on the notion of cheap energy. So let's start rethinking and taking charge of the planning process for future growth, concentrating growth in town centers and downtowns, and in cities large and small, concentrating some growth in some of the older suburbs that you see that are gaining popularity now, going back and rediscovering and recycling what we've already built before we go out to yet another cornfield and let the bulldozers loose.
I don't know if you've seen the documentary The End of Suburbia, but their theme is the same as yours, which is this is unsustainable and people will be forced, you know, back to the centers. Is that even possible if we have such great growth? And does the government need to get involved to really make this development more sustainable?
Yes, absolutely. And what government needs to do is to be prepared for what I predict is going to be a great shift in consumer demand as you see more people interested in more concentrated settlement. But the nitty-gritty work the government needs to do is to change zoning to allow this kind of town center or downtown living. Right now, so much of our zoning actually prohibits the mixed-use development that people really are going to be clamoring for in the years ahead. Now, this is because zoning is 80 years old, and it's based on the principle of separated use. And there are just some technical aspects of our rules governing development that need to be changed to make sure that there are alternatives to sprawl available for people, for those who want them.
And, of course, other than choosing where you live, which is a personal choice, what else can average folks do to try to combat sprawl? Is that even possible?
Well, you know, finding a home is really the most personal choice we all make, and we make it as individuals, and we're not really thinking about the society or the planet. Well, some of us are, but most of us aren't thinking about the planet when we decide how to live. So really what I'm recommending is people really make an honest assessment of their living needs. How much house do they really need? Is it really convenient and cost-effective to live an hour from where you work and to own two or three cars and spend so much money on them? To make those kinds of honest assessments of, well, what really is a good quality of life? How can I make my living arrangements more convenient and more conducive to a sense of community? It's really just sort of looking in the mirror and figuring out, how do I really want to live?
And thank you for choosing this book and writing it. I should have mentioned at the beginning of the interview that you have been a journalist for 20 years, primarily at the Boston Globe, where you covered these issues, planning, development, transportation, architecture. And I guess in that column you were writing on urban design and public space, you decided this was something that was worth writing a book about.
Yes. As I travel across the country, I saw how so many areas were really just wrestling with growth and development and trying to figure out how to go forward more
sensibly.
Thank you.
We'll have to have you back. Anthony Flint, author of This Land, out in bookstores this month.